My name's Danny Newport. I've been with Citrix for going on 2 years now. Based in Sydney, but you'll find I don't have an Australian accent because I'm originally from Wellington. So my role in Citrix primarily, other than doing lots of events and stuff, is to focus on the Microsoft technologies, so where we integrate with Microsoft, so Zen Desktop on Hyper-V and all our System Center integration stuff. So today I'm going to focus on the System Center side of things. And obviously try and make it relevant in the context of BYOD, which seems to be a conversation we're having a lot with our customers. You guys having lots of BYO conversations? Good. It's relevant then. That's what I thought. I want to apologize for hiding behind stuff, but I don't really have anywhere I can kind of walk around. I prefer not to hide behind lecterns, but this is what it looks like. So I'm going to start straight up with this. Who's excited about these four letters? Yeah, I didn't think so. Who's scared of them? Yeah. Who's got a strategy that looks like that? Who's got C-level folk rocking in with iPads and Android devices and going, make it work here? You getting that? Who's got a BYO strategy that looks something like that? Because you're going to hear a lot of that. We can do BYO, as long as it's on a Windows device. It's not really BYO, is it? BYO is primarily about choice. Here's an extract from a Gartner write-up from last year around where they think it's going. And I'm not going to read it all out, but the fact is consumerization is driving a lot of innovation in your organizations, whether you like it or not. So Citrix has been playing in this space for a long time. We've been delivering, you know, desktops and applications to any device kind of forever. So this isn't a new message for us, but it's getting hammered home to you guys. And I guess that's why most of you are sitting in this room today, because it's kind of relevant. The one thing I do want to highlight is this thing here. By 2014, so says Gartner, 90% of organizations will be supporting corporate applications on personal devices. So your challenge, and just so I know who I'm talking to, I recognize some faces, so I know we've got a mix of partners and customers probably in here. Partners? Customers? Okay, there's primarily customers, which is interesting. So you need to work out how to do this, right? And it's not always an easy challenge to solve. So someone walks in with a non-Windows device, and you're going, I've got all these ways that I do things. This is the next question I usually get. People go, I love your desktop and application virtualization. It's really cool. I like the idea of delivering to anything, anywhere, all that kind of stuff that we talk about. But what does that mean for me? What does it mean for my support organization? Do I have to hire new people? Do I have to sack the ones I've got? Do I got to retrain them? I don't get it. What does that mean for me? And I'm going to assume, because you're at a Microsoft event, that most of you, the customers at least, are System Center customers, and the partners are partners that deal with System Center and implement them for your customers. Am I correct? Primarily? The good thing about what we do at Citrix and how we've architected our desktop and application virtualization solutions and our relationship with Microsoft is that we integrate very, very closely with System Center. So the upshot of it is, if you currently use Config Manager to manage your desktops and applications in a physical world, you don't have to change anything. And that message really resonates with the customers that I've been talking to is, if you currently deliver Windows updates, you do your patching using System Center. If you currently deploy applications, be they AppV or MSI or whatever, using Config Manager, you don't have to change anything just because you want to use our technologies. What if there was a single pane of glass to manage virtual desktops and applications, or physical for that matter? That's where we're going. So I'm going to drop into talking about our Zenapp connector for Config Manager. So we've had one of those for a little while. We've had one that supports Config Manager 2007, R2, and R3. We've got one in tech preview now that is publicly available for Config Manager 2012. So that's where my focus is going to be. I'm not going to talk about what we already do. I'm going to talk about what we are doing. For you that are Config Manager customers, you'll know that this is what the Config Manager world kind of looks like. All right? It's designed to deliver Windows applications to corporate devices generally sitting on a desk, their domain joined, with users that typically sit in an office somewhere. You add the Citrix connector, which is codenamed Thor. I don't name these things, sorry. And you get this. What you enable, essentially, is for Config Manager to extend its reach out to BYO scenarios. So you can have, to talk in Config Manager parlance, you can have lightly managed, non-managed, and non-Windows devices having applications pushed from System Center. And you can, they don't have to be connected to a domain. They don't need to be domain-joined devices to enable that. They can be working from anywhere, which is kind of what people want to do these days. So what does a connector do for you, in a nutshell? It unifies application management primarily, application management and deployment. So from the Config Manager console, you can deploy Zenapp, MSI, AppV, CAB files as well, the mobile ones. This isn't a new story for us. You can deliver any app to any device, anywhere. And you can do it in a highly available way. And that probably sounds a little weird. So I'm going to dwell on this point for a little while just to explain exactly what that means. And because this is a fairly small room to present in, if you've got any questions, I'd like to make this interactive as well, so that I know that you guys are getting what you want out of this session. I'd rather not just stand here and have a monologue and assume you're interested in what I'm talking about. So if you do have some questions, by all means ask them as I go, and I'll try and address them if they're relevant. If they're not, I'll tell you to shut up. So the highly available thing, what that means is we have a feature in Zenapp called Power and Capacity Management. PCM for short, you might see it written somewhere. So our connector leverages this technology. So what it does is, I guess PCM, when it was designed for Zenapp, the intention was kind of a green thing. So what it can do is spread the load automatically across all of your Zenapp servers for maximum performance, or it can consolidate load onto the minimum number of hosts and power some down overnight, for example, to save on power and all that kind of stuff. So that's what its original design was for. How Config Manager leverages it, if you want to deploy an MSI application across your entire Zenapp farm, for example, and some Zenapp farms can be pretty large. So what it does is you push an MSI package to it, but you can't really be installing stuff when, I mean, Zenapp being what it is, a lot of users could be on that box using it at that time. So not the best thing to do. So what it does is it automatically makes that server unavailable for new logons, and via attrition, as the logons drain, that box will eventually have no one on it. The MSI package will then install and will reboot the server if necessary. Then it will make it available, and it will do that to the next one, and the next one, and the next one. So you can deploy these in an automated fashion. It's completely hands-off with zero user impact. So that's what the highly available thing means. And reuse, application and IP reuse, and talent reuse as well. So all your existing infrastructure investments in Zenapp and Config Manager and your people investments aren't wasted. So just because you want to do something new or innovative, you don't have to retrain and throw out the old stuff and buy something new. What's new in SCCM 2012? I'm not going to pretend I know lots about SCCM 2012. I'm a Citrix guy, so this isn't a Config Manager session primarily, but I'm going to focus on what's new in a Citrix-relevant context. And primarily, this is the biggest change that makes sense for us, because we've always been about getting apps to users and stuff. So Config Manager 2012 changes its paradigm. It's still called System Center, because I guess it still manages systems. But it changes its focus to it's a user-centric management platform. You can deploy applications to users effectively. All right, so these are some of the new concepts in Config Manager. And these ones here I've highlighted in yellow are the ones that are relevant to us in the context of the ZenApp connector and how we want to do things. So it's deployment types, user-centric administration, and the app catalog. Okay. I'm going to walk through some builds now because I didn't make these slides. I'd like to be able to claim that I did. But this is a really effective way in showing customers especially how effective Config Manager 2012 is compared to the previous version and what that means in a ZenApp context. So over on the right, you'll see the deployment types. And in SCCM 2012, ZenApp is a first-class citizen now. So there is a ZenApp deployment type built into Config Manager 2012. So let's say in this scenario, you want to deploy an application, in this case Adobe Reader, to Tony, and you have a choice of deployment types to do that. So Tony, as a user, will be a member of some groups and have some security rights and stuff like that. He'll also have a hardware environment associated with him at any given point in time. That could be his desktop PC at work, it could be a thin client, it could be an iPad at home, it could be anything. And he will also have a software environment associated with him at any given point in time, which could be a Windows platform, it could be domain joined, it could be a non-Windows platform, it could be a Xero client for that matter. So what you can do is build these rules that whenever Tony tries to connect and run an application, at that point in time, it will assess the best way to deliver that application to him. So if Tony's using a laptop with less than 512 meg of RAM, then maybe the best way to deliver that application to him is using ZenApp and host it and process it in the data center because he's on a device that isn't that capable. So that's probably going to give him the best experience. Or if he's on a device that's got greater than 40 gig of disk space, then maybe the best way is to stream that using AppV. Or if he's on his primary device, because obviously Config Manager now has the concept of primary device, if he's always going to want this application, just install it using MSI and save the time next time, because he's always going to want it. So how does an admin use Thor? What does that mean? And we'll drop in some demos so that we can actually see what this means and looks like as well. So you create the application first, and that's kind of a no-brainer. You would do that anyway. You then create one of the other deployment types, so either an AppV or MSI deployment type. Then you also create the ZenApp deployment type from one of those other deployment types. So the MSI or AppV deployment type are targeted at users, so you apply that to a user group or however you would ordinarily do that in Config Manager, and apply your ZenApp deployment type to your ZenApp farm or one of the worker groups inside of your ZenApp farm. And the connector makes that really easy for you, and I'll show that in the demo as well. And then there's the app catalog. So the app catalog has a lot of crossover with the Citrix receiver. So they're both kind of a self-service portal that users use to go shopping for their apps, and you can kind of dump shortcuts and start menus and desktops and stuff like that. Problem being, everyone wants a single pane of glass. You don't want to use both of these if you don't have to. So kind of therein lies the challenge. You can't deliver or you can't show the ZenApp deployment type inside of the SCCM app catalog because it just doesn't understand it. Obviously, the MSI and AppV ones you can. So the challenge I think people are coming across at the moment that are going down this path is what's the best tool to use? For users, I would probably suggest, and I would because I'm from Citrix, that the receiver is probably the way that your users are going to get most things in one place at one time. The only true place that is a single pane of glass right now is the start menu, because each of these tools can dump stuff on the start menu. So depending on whether it's a corporate joined device, I mean, because a non-domain joined device like users connecting from home, or on an iPad or something like that, you don't have access to the app catalog anyway. Right? The only thing that can go on any platform is Citrix Receiver, which is why I made the comment before. So I'm going to burn through this. This is a little confusing, but it just basically shows some crossover. I'm going to build it straight out. Basically, this shows that as I said, there's crossover between app catalog and receiver. Receiver is the place where almost everything will show up. Obviously, MSI packages won't show up in Citrix Receiver because it's not designed to deploy MSI packages and install it on the device that you're using. But what we can do is we can kind of fudge that and say, okay, let MSI packages show up there if that's the way you've published them. But what will happen is it will deploy that MSI package to a XenApp host and then deliver that via XenApp. So you can do that. We can make everything show up in Receiver if that's the way you want it to happen. What that will do, however, is screw up some of your Config Manager reporting because you'll think you're delivering MSI packages and actually it's coming out via XenApp. I don't know if that's a big deal for you guys, but we can have a single pane of glass in the receiver by fudging a couple of things. I'll finish building that. Can I take it by your stunned silence and lack of questions that you're just in complete awe? Oh, question, look at that. Yes. Yeah, there's really no retrofitting. So the question was, can you retrofit your apps for the XenApp deployment type? So if you have an app vStreamed that's been tested on in a multi-user environment, i.e. RDS or XenApp host, if you're confident that it will work, it's just another app. It's no different to deploying to XenApp. Absolutely. Absolutely. Provided your application works on the XenApp platform or on an RDS host, you can absolutely just create a XenApp deployment type and do it that way. There's no kind of retrofitting process or anything really clever that needs to be done. It's just another way to deliver it. So it's no different to, and this is what I said, if you're already managing your applications and desktops using Config Manager, you don't have to retrain or change your processes. So if you deliver app vStreams to desktops now, and that same app vStream will work on our RDS host, and they can, use the same package and just create a XenApp deployment type, punch it out to your XenApp servers, and host it to anyone, anywhere. It's that simple. So, Config Manager 2012. I will drop back to 2007, R2 and R3 briefly right now and say they were really crap at managing and understanding the pooled VDI scenario, right? So if you tried to have a single read-only image of like a Windows 7, for example, in your data center and stream that using provisioning services, Config Manager just didn't understand it. Despite the fact they said it had the same host name and the same MAC address, every time one of those desktops rebooted, a new entry got created in the Config Manager database, and you ended up with a database full of rubbish that was completely senseless, and you couldn't manage or report on anything. There was a workaround to it, but it was really ugly. So Config Manager 2012 has been built with virtualization in mind. It understands it. It gets pulled desktops and stuff, and due to the fact that we had developers in Redmond working closely with the Microsoft guys on this, we said, hey, this is the way we do stuff, and they went, cool. If you write stuff here, Config Manager will always know this is a device it's seen before. So that's what we've done. There's unique machine IDs for shared image virtual desktops. You can have a single read-only image in the data center, and again, I'll show you this. And every read-only image that's spun up off that, and that could be thousands of them, is seen as a unique device in Config Manager, and you can report on that appropriately. What you wouldn't want to do, however, is deploy software to that because it's a read-only image, and that wouldn't make sense at all. But they thought of that as well, and again, I'll drop into that in the demos. There are new virtual desktop attributes. So for those of you who are good at writing queries, and I'm not one of those, last time I wrote a query was SMS2, and I wasn't very good at it then either. But for those of you who are good at writing queries, you can automate the entire process of application deployment, management, and delivery. So let's say you're spinning up thousands of desktops from a single image from provisioning services. What you can do is write a query to say any device that's in this desktop group, for example. So it can actually query the Zen desktop group that it's in based on the new attributes that are written. So any desktop that shows up in this group automatically ends up in a collection in Config Manager and therefore has applications published to it. So you can kind of do clever stuff like that. And there are new policies based on virtual desktop attributes as well. And I've kind of probably been across that. It understands the pull desktop thing, and the important thing is, despite the fact that you don't want to do software deployment to read-only desktops, you still want the agent running on those desktops so you can do all the other stuff that Config Manager is designed to do, like reporting and inventory and all that kind of stuff. So you get that. And again, I'll show you how to do that. For those geeks in the room, which is probably most of you, these are some of the new virtual desktop attributes that have been burned in. So the ones on the left are inherent in Config Manager. The ones on the right are specific to Citrix environment, so Zen Desktop. There is a little bit of crossover, but primarily you can, the one that says OS changes persist if that is true or false, either if it's false, then it's a read-only image and it'll know not to push software to it and stuff like that. And this is where you can build your queries. You can see which broker it's associated with, which site it's associated with, whether it's assigned to a user or not, whether it has persistent data, so our personal Vitas technology. So there's a bunch of stuff you can query to do some intelligent stuff in Config Manager. Demo. Have I talked enough? You want to see it? Okay. Before I jump into demos, are there any questions on that? Stunned. Okay. That's right. I have to switch. Let's try this. All right. CCM. Okay. Apologize for the resolution. I don't have any native drivers for my laptop, so this is what it does. Okay, the Thor connector. So this should be, for those of you who are already playing with 2012, this should be a fairly familiar interface by now. So as soon as you install the ZenApp connector, it does this. So I didn't create these folders or collections or anything like that. So the good thing about the Thor connector as it goes out and it automatically discovers your ZenApp farm and the structure of your ZenApp farm. And as you can see, it's also discovered the worker groups that I have in there, so the desktop and application worker groups I have, and the servers that reside inside of them. So if you make any changes to your ZenApp farm or anything like that, they automatically get populated into this console. You don't have to manually go and set up and configure queries so you know what your ZenApp farm looks like and stuff like that. The connector does all of that for you. Can you limit the discovery? Well, it won't search through your forest. So the nature of the connector is the question was, can you limit the discovery so that it doesn't go and search your whole forest and stuff like that? So the way the connector works is when you install and configure it, you point it at one of your ZenApp servers, and that's kind of the broker server. And it's most likely going to be your zone data collector or something like that. So that's also the power and capacity management node as well. So that's, it kind of just talks to one of the servers and it spreads out from there. So you don't need to trawl your entire directory to find these. It is very targeted in the first place. Okay. So that's kind of that. So already it's simplifying your management, so you don't have to go and manually create all this stuff. What version does this support? ZenApp 6.5. Yes, yeah. So they are version tied, unfortunately. So you'll find that 2007 and R2 and R3 were also version tied. This is just being ported forward, not backward, unfortunately. Okay, and I'll just switch to my software library, application management, applications. I've only got a couple in here, but I just want to show you the deployment types. So I'll switch to deployment types down the bottom here. So this Firefox one here is native MSI, as you can see. Office 2010 also MSI, but Office Professional 2003 is where it's an AppV native stream, and I've attached a Zenapp deployment type to this one. So if you've published that AppV stream to users, and I've published this Zenapp deployment type to my Zenapp farm, then when those users log in and say, I want one of these Office 2003 applications, it will stream to Zenapp and then host it out to them. So it's kind of really that simple. As you can see in here, there's also a Zenapp Publications node, which is also built when you install the connector. So what this does, and it's extraordinarily simple, all this does is essentially launch, for those of you who have done any kind of Zenapp administration, that pretty much is the Zenapp publishing wizard, only it shows up in the Config Manager console. Right, so it's the same thing. So if I go test, go next, I can choose whether it's an installed or AppV application, so MSI or AppV deployment type. Pick AppV, it'll go and find all the AppV packages that I have available, which is kind of one. I can pick one application, so I'll stream publisher, go next. Can drop in and configure my advanced settings as well. So access control, all that kind of stuff, file type associations. Limits, client options, that's it. Click finish, that gets pushed out to my farm. You're done. So you don't, the beauty of this being a single pane of glass is once you've done your application management here, you don't then have to jump into your Zenapp application management tool and publish the application and make sure it gets going to the right people. You've already done that in this console here. So you don't have to have lots and lots of different consoles, which is something we've been criticized for in the past, oddly enough. Okay. So that, kind of in a nutshell, is the Thor connector. That's as complicated as it gets. Does anyone want to see anything else or to have any questions on that? Because I'm going to kind of drop into the provisioning services realm and managing single images in a data center kind of space. So, no? I don't know. There's a tech preview out now, so I would hope that would suggest it's not that far away. So there is a public tech preview, and I have a link in this deck which you will all get access to. And you click on that, and there is a public tech preview. You can pull down the Thor connector and install it and play with it yourself. I haven't been given an exact date, so, and to be honest, if I was, I probably wouldn't be allowed to tell you anyway. But I haven't. I actually don't know. But I'm hoping the fact that there is a public tech preview out, and I've had this code for quite a while, and it's pretty stable, that it's not too far away. One of the challenges we've got is to support a lot of this stuff. We're also very reliant on, I mean, we know that Microsoft's going through a lot of change in a platform release right now. What that means for their management tools is Service Pack 1 for Config Manager and VMM and stuff is imminent. A lot of our stuff is built on, obviously, on top of their stuff. So until they've released SP1 for VMM or SECM, we can't complete our code and release it either. So we're kind of tied to their schedules to a degree. Okay. I'm going to switch back to my device collections. So before I go too far down this path, who doesn't know what provisioning services is or does? Come on, I'm not going to throw stuff at you. Okay. I'm hoping that most do, but this isn't a provisioning services session, so I'm going to give you the short version. Provisioning services, to me, so what it's supposed to do, what it does, is it provides you a single instance of an operating system, well, that's the intention, that sits in the data center, and you can stream that on demand to thousands of other devices. And what that means in real terms is you manage one desktop or one image of a desktop, and that gets deployed immediately to thousands of other devices. So your management overhead goes down significantly for in a pooled VDI scenario. So how that works and how I explain it in as layman terms as I can get is It's a hard drive that sits in the data center. So let's assume I've taken the hard drive out of this device. I plug that hard drive into an Ethernet cable and I walk it to the data center and I stick it there. So high performance connection, but one image. The beauty of that is I can connect thousands of other, you know, diskless devices to that same hard drive. So essentially that's what it is. You need two provisioning servers in the data center, because clearly if you unplug a hard drive from a device that's currently running off it, it will blue screen. So it becomes a very important piece of infrastructure, obviously, because it is your hard drive in the data center. Is that an okay explanation? It's kind of simple, but it's the concept that's important. So you can see I've got some device collections here, and we'll focus on the bottom three, because that's where I'm going to drop back into provisioning services and show you what that means and how this all kind of works. So I've got a couple of pooled desktop collections, and you can see there's 15 devices in there. The infrastructure we're looking at here, by the way, I don't have something hidden under the desk. This actually runs our executive briefing center back in Sydney, so I'm connected back to Sydney. This is the infrastructure. I manage the EBC in Sydney, so this is the stuff that's running our briefing center currently. This is active. So I've got my Win7 pooled desktops. So I've got 10 pooled Win7 desktops here running off a single Windows 7 image. That single Windows 7 image resides in that collection. And the reason I've done that, you'll notice that one's got read-write next to it and one says pulled. You want to differentiate between the two because, as I said before, you don't want to be trying to push software updates and patches to read-only images. You're wasting your time and you're creating overhead that's just it's unnecessary and painful. You do, however, want to manage your read-write one, the single image you have in the data center. So how you achieve that within Config Manager 2012, or how I've achieved it, there are a couple of ways of doing it. My default client settings, if I just drop in here, go to Computer Agent, scroll down, and I'm hoping you can see okay. This one here, third from bottom, says Agent Extensions manage the deployment of applications and software updates. So my default client settings, in my case, is false. So by default, nothing in the Executive Briefing Center in Sydney will automatically get software updates pushed to them using the Config Manager agent. That's my default. A lot of organizations' default will be the other way. You'll say true, because you will want to manage them. They'll have a mixture of physical and virtual and stuff like that. For me, it's false. So by default, nothing gets software updates. So then I have this policy, which essentially all it does is change that one setting to true. And I apply that to that one collection that has my read-write image in it. It's that simple. So that's one of the good things about Config Manager 2012 is, with us working with them, they kind of get the concept of a read-only image in the data center, a whole bunch of pooled desktops being spun off it. So obviously the challenge before this was System Center being a system-centric tool. Provisioning services isn't a system that's managed. The desktop is a file, right? It's a VHD file that sits on a server somewhere in the data center. So it's a real paradigm change for, A, the guys that wrote the tool in the first place, and B, the people that use it, to change to managing files as opposed to actually physical devices. So that's kind of, it works now, which is important. Okay. So I'm going to drop into provisioning services and show you what that looks like on that end. For those of you who haven't seen it before, this is the PVS console. And what we're looking at here is my VDisk store, and I've got one Windows 7 image and one Windows XP image. They've got a little lock next to them because they're in use. If I drop into my versions dialog here, you can see I've got several versions and stuff. I'll pop back here in a minute and show you what that's actually for. You'll see here I've got a Windows 7 desktops and Windows XP desktops group. So the way I've built it is my collections in Config Manager align directly with my device collections and PVS, because that just makes sense in the way you're going to want to deploy and manage this stuff. Can they sync? So they won't sync by themselves, but where, like what I said before is with the new virtual desktop attributes that we're writing into Config Manager, if you write a query that says, if a desktop turns up and this desktop group is in desktop, then drop it in this collection, then absolutely they will sync. So I couldn't write a query to save my life, so I've manually stuffed things into my collections, right? But it wouldn't take a very clever Config Manager guide to do something like that. Anyone that knows anything about the tool, I guess, could, because it's pretty straightforward. So every device there with a green tick on it is powered up. So all 10 of my Windows 7 devices are powered up. They're all associated with a VDisk, or the same VDisk in this case, because that makes sense. They're in the same collection. They all have a type of production. This will make sense. It sounds like I'm blurting out random stuff at the moment, but this will make sense as I walk through this process. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to walk you through the manual, you know, single golden image, if you like, update process, and then I'm going to show you how we've automated that and integrated that with Config Manager as well. So here I've got 10 read-only pull desktops spun up off one image. I could easily have 1,000 or a couple of thousand in the same collection, and nothing changes in the way you manage it. All right, so scale is irrelevant here. The process is the same, and the way you manage it from either here or Config Manager is the same. Okay. So I'm going to walk through kind of a fake update of my Windows 7 desktop fleet. So that's the logical representation of my golden image that sits on this server. I'll show you what that looks like on disk. Okay, you see there's a whole bunch of stuff in here. That one there, Win7 VDisk V3, is a 24 gig file, all right? And you'll see my versions dialog that I dropped into before had a few other versions inside of there as well. So the way we do versioning inside of provisioning services is when we create a new version, what it does, where's my next Windows 7 V3.1 AVHD? So we do VHD chaining. So when you crack that open, if you like, what you're doing is capturing the deltas between the base and what you're currently doing in an AVHD file. And then when that device reboots and starts, it chains back down to the base again. So you get all your changes without ever having to, well, not ever, without having to mess around with your base image unnecessarily. All right. So what that does is it gives you a roll forward, roll back capability and a lot of flexibility and speed in the way you can do this. You used to have to take a complete copy of your base image, so another 24 gig image, modify that and roll that in a bunch of other ways. You used to have to line up all your ducks really specifically in PVS for that to work properly, but you don't have to do that anymore. So right at the top, you'll see I'm up to there. That's my last. So I'm up to version 5, so 3.5 AVHD, which is a 2 gig file. If I drop back into here and go into my versions dialog, you'll see that's at version 5. So wherever that green tick is, any device that has a type of production, anytime it reboots, will boot from whichever version has that green tick next to it. All right? If you want to create a new version, and this is the manual process, you click New. It creates version 6. That's in a type of maintenance, as you'll see over here. And done. It's almost exactly that simple. If I switch back here, you can see that I now have a version 3.6.avhd, which has a very small file size because I haven't done anything to it yet. So here, I have maintenance devices. These devices have a type of maintenance. What that device type means is any device with a type of production, as I said before, will automatically boot into wherever that green tick is in your versions dialog. Any device with a type of maintenance or test, when you boot that, will come up with a boot menu to say which one do you want to boot into. So clearly only administrators are going to see that because it happens on your hypervisor platform. And I'll show you that. Yes, unfortunately, I'm running on Zen server at a Microsoft event, but this is for demonstration purposes. Okay, so that T-based desktop W7 is one of the ones that's in maintenance. So this is the one I use to maintain my golden image. If I boot it, it will come up with a boot menu to say, do you want to boot into the current production one, or do you want to boot into, and maint will be in brackets. So this is the PVS boot process. It goes and gets a DHCP address. It talks to my PVS server, pulls down a file called ardbp32.bin, and that is its boot instructions and goes, this is your MAC address, and this is your VDisk assignment. Start streaming that disk. That's kind of the process it just went through. And then I get a boot menu. Then you want to boot into version 3.5 or 3.6, which is in maintenance, which means read-write. Whatever changes I make there will be persistent. So let's assume that I've made my changes. It's going to let me power it down. I'll do a graceful shutdown. So I've installed my applications, or I've patched it, or whatever I wanted to do to it, right? Nice graceful shutdown. No one does that, do they? Surely not. Oh, what have I lost here? Yeah, I love the touch gestures in Windows 8. This thing's going nuts on me. Okay. Provisioning services. Okay. So let's assume that I've installed my application or my patches or whatever I wanted to do to it, and I've shut it down. Back to versions. Select version 6, which is currently in maintenance. Hit promote. And I wanted to promote it into test. So my UAT team can validate the changes that I've made. While all this is going on, any device, as I said before, that is set to production, if they reboot, they're just automatically going into the production VDisk. They have no idea any of this is going on, right? There is zero impact to production while you're doing this. Roll it into test. What it's done here, for those of you that know anything about VHD chaining, I've set it to warn me. So I've set it to warn, if I get more than 5 versions away from my base, it's probably time to start thinking about merging up to a new base, because the more chains you have back down to the base, the further away you get, you're going to start hitting some performance impacts. All right? And to be fair, if you've got 5 away from your base, you're probably comfortable enough with versions 1, 2, and 3. All right? You're not going to want to roll back. So at this point, it prompts you to go, you know what, you should start thinking about, I'm not going to roll up to a new base, but I just wanted to demonstrate the fact that you can build in here safeguards, you know, against performance and stuff like that. So no to merge versions. You'll see now that I've rolled that into test, it's got a type of test, oddly enough. So any device, switch back to here, that is set to type test can boot into that image that I've just created. They don't get a read-write image. They get a read-only version of what I did, so they can't make changes, but they can validate the changes that I made. Once they're happy with it, again, we drop into our versions dialog, go promote, and I can promote it into production either immediately, or I can schedule that for some outage window or whatever. Clearly, I'm going to do immediately. And done. Now it doesn't have a type of production because it's kind of the default one, but you'll notice the green tick has moved up to version 6. At this point, any device that has the type of production, which is any one of these, when it reboots, will pick up the changes that I've made. It's that simple. And in fact, if I want to, I can just go like this. Target device, restart. And that, like I said, that could be thousands. You probably don't want to start 1,000 all at once. But the fact is, you can do it from here. And if you've got an outage window, and you can automate this process as well, you can just punch those changes out immediately across thousands of devices, which is fantastic, right? Really, really minimal management. What it also does, depending on your processes, I'm sure everyone's processes are fine, but if you've screwed something up, you've potentially just affected thousands of devices immediately. Not as bad as it sounds, because rolling back is actually easier than rolling forward. So if you want to roll back, you've screwed something up, just hit revert, back to maintenance, because you need to change something. My green tick drops back down to number 5. You reboot your devices again, and you're exactly back where you were before, which is the benefit of a VHD chaining as opposed to changing the base image itself. So that's the manual process. It's not difficult. It's actually pretty elegant, I think. I mean, I think we do a lot of cool things at Citrix, but provisioning services, for me, is hands down one of the coolest. What we've done, but wait, there's more. What we've done is we've built in this VDisk update management node. So that was a manual process, like I said. We can automate. Everything I just did can be automated. So under this update management node, I've got a host infrastructure connection, so I can manage, you know, from I can connect to my Zen server host here. The credentials are cached in there, so I can do power management and stuff like that. I've got my VDisks listed in here. So my two VDisks, my Windows 7 and Windows XP, and I have auto-update VMs associated with them. These VMs actually exist on the hypervisor infrastructure. And then I have a tasks node. So what I can do from here is hit add task. Got wizards for everything. Let's do a patch Tuesday task, because we do that. Let's say every week on Tuesday at midnight, I want you to start that VDisk on that VM. And you can integrate this with WSRS or Config Manager, or there's an other at the bottom. So you can pretty much kick off any process you want. So even if you're not a Config Manager customer or a WSRS, you can kick off pretty much any process using this tool. So I'll hit SCCM. You can do pre- and post-update scripts, so you can prepare your image before and after whatever you're wanting to do. So as any good ESD tool would, you can do whatever you want to it. When I'm finished, roll it into test so my UAT team can validate it. Done. So that is me just automating everything I just did manually. And it's that simple. So at midnight on Tuesday, that auto-update VM will start that VDisk. It clearly already needs to have an SCCM agent on it, and it needs to exist in the SCCM database. The device needs to know about it, and you need to have things published to it as you ordinarily would for a physical device or whatever. Like I said, your management doesn't change just because this is a file that sits on PVS. So when that device starts up with your golden image cracked open into read-write, all we're doing really is kick-starting the SCCM agent to say, go and look for some jobs that you have to do. Those jobs will run, it will shut down and roll into test. Your UAT team comes in the morning, validates your tests, you roll into production, and you're done. So the whole thing is automated end-to-end. Who's impressed with that? Come on. Seriously. Yeah, I'm impressed. Okay, so that's me done with consoles. Does anyone want to see anything else on the console before I shut this one down? No. Good. Okay. I'm going to show you one other thing. And that's one of the actual desktops that's spun up off this image. Yeah, I love it when live demos actually work. I have the utmost confidence. Seriously, we are one of the few companies that every single place we go, we demo our stuff. Because it demos so much better. I mean, I can stand up here and jawbone until I'm blue in the face, but until you actually see this stuff working, it's hard to kind of grasp some of the concepts sometimes. So this is one of my desktops. Desktop 3 in this case. And the only reason I'm jumping in here is you can see this little flashing icon down here. This is my PVS, my Provisioning Services VDisk Target Device Agent. And you can see here which version of VDisk I'm booting from. This is 3.5 AVHD, so you know you're chaining back down. Tells you which server you're connected to, all that kind of stuff. And it says which mode you're in. So I'm in read-only mode, and any changes I'm making are being cached on the provisioning server. I drop into stats, and this always surprises people. Provisioning services, just because it's streaming in OS, doesn't mean you stream the whole OS. Okay? So to boot this device, if you have a look at that top section here, It took 47 seconds to boot, and a whole of 126 megabytes of data to boot that device. All right? So you don't have to stream 24 gigabytes across whatever network you happen to be on to start these devices. They start really fast, and there's not a whole lot going across the wire all the time. All right? The next best thing about that is with provisioning services, because it's a one-to-many relationship, there's not a lot of storage requirement in the back end. So once provisioning services has read out of storage whatever it takes to boot this device, any other devices that booting off the same image reads straight out of PVS memory. All right, it's bus speeds. There are no more reads off storage unless you're doing something new in that OS. As you can see, since I started this, and it's been up for nearly 13 hours, this desktop, I've still only written or read out 648 megabytes of data. I haven't even gotten to a gig yet. All right, so obviously the more you use it and the more you do with it and the less you reboot it, the more you're going to write out. But the beauty is most of it's at bus speed straight off the provisioning server because someone's already read those bits out before. So as I said, it's not a PVS session, so I'm going to leave that at that. Sorry? Yes, I rolled back, remember, and I hadn't rebooted that device. No, it won't tell you there's a pending version upgrade, but what you can do is I'll show you where we can what you can do about that. So the question was, can you see anywhere in here that there's a pending version upgrade and maybe you should reboot to get the changes, yes? Okay. So what you can do is I'll back into the PVS console. I said I wasn't going into consoles again. Go to my desktops, and I'll go to desktop 3, which is the one I was just on, and I can go target device, send message. All right, I can go, dude, I've just made some changes, save your stuff, and reboot, or I'm rebooting at midnight, so you don't have any choice, or something. But you can send a message, there'll be a pop-up on screen, right? Okay. That is, I think I switched back to, no, it's not that one, which is my presentation machine. Is it this one? My presentation machine's not coming up here. 1, 2, I think it was on 3, but it, oh, sorry, it's the green one. My apologies, I can't drive this thing. Okay, there's the URL for the Thor, the ZenApp connector for SCCM 2012 tech preview. You will get a copy of this deck, so you can just click on that. So I'm briefly going to drop into what's next for Citrix now. I've got 5 minutes, I think, to roll through this, and it shouldn't take too long. Zen Desktop and ZenApp.next. Who doesn't want to hear about that? I do. I can't tell you a lot, unfortunately. I'm kind of hamstrung. I can have some slightly deeper NDA conversations, but because TechEd is largely a public forum, I'm rather hamstrung on what I can actually talk about and the depth I can go. I can tell you that there is going to be much closer alignment between Zen Desktop and ZenApp. There will be fewer consoles, and it will be much simpler to deploy and manage. And clearly, obviously, we're going to support Windows 8 and Server 2012, so RDS 2012 and Windows 8 VDI. And we will be leveraging and extending RDS 2012 capabilities. So you will hear a lot of talk, and RDS 2012 has been improved out of sight, the console, and the protocol in particular. There's a bunch more stuff it can do now, which is really, really good. There are some requirements that you need to meet to get those benefits, but we are still clearly, this happens every time there's a Microsoft platform upgrade, everyone goes, sweet, don't need ZenApp anymore. In some cases, you might not, which is great. Innovation's awesome because it gives us a new platform to innovate on top of as well. We will be extending the capabilities of RDS 2012. Has anyone already heard of Project Avalon? One. Okay. Project Avalon's kind of the next big thing, slated for maybe sometime around this time next year, but there'll be a lead up to it. So really it's about delivering, like true cloud delivery for any Windows application or desktop. So Zen Desktop and Zen App on steroids in your private or public cloud, basically. So it kind of lends itself to that now. I mean, Zen Desktop and Zen App is just that kind of workload where you can do that. And a lot of service providers do use Zen App to do this. But this is just, you might see things like inside of the Zen Desktop Management Console, when you create a desktop group, your hosting infrastructure might be Rackspace or Azure or something like that, as opposed to just in your data center. So you'll see seamless integration between private and public cloud and things like that. It will be highly optimized and obviously based on cloud stack technologies. For those of you that don't know, cloud stack is a stack that Citrix basically donated to the Apache Open Source Foundation. So CloudStack is now open source, but we have obviously a Citrix version of that that is productized. So that's coming. That's what it looks like. I'm not going to go through all that. Basically what that says, it integrates everything and ties into everything we're already doing. So everything we're doing now makes sense in the context of delivering this seamlessly between private and public clouds. We have products called Cloud Portal and all that kind of stuff. We have a project underway called Rainmaker, and some of that's already been delivered, but that's the cloud scale automation, so automating between private and public clouds and making all that kind of seamless. Obviously, Zen Desktop and Zen App. ShareFile, so the corporate Dropbox that we have. Cloud Bridge for seamlessly bridging between private and public. So pretty much everything we've got is going into this. Demo. Now, I'll switch back to one of these, this one. I'm going to cross my fingers and hope this works because live demos are like this. Windows 8 VDI. This is about as... It didn't change. Now it changed. This is about as much as I'm allowed to show you, the fact that we can do Windows 8 VDI. So this is very, very pre-release code that I had to beg lots to get access to just to show you here. And I've been hamstrung a lot, and as I said, as to how much I can actually tell you about what's going on under the covers and why and all that kind of stuff. But I'm allowed to show you that we can do it. Okay? This is coming. There is a private tech preview out now, Tech Preview 1, for I guess, zendesktop.next. That doesn't have new platform support, so Windows 8 Server 2012. Some customers are already involved in that, giving us active feedback. This is, obviously, pre-release code of Tech Preview 2, which is due to drop in about a month and a half. Again, it's still a private tech preview, but some customers do have access to it. We are working really hard. We know there's a pent-up desire for people to want to deliver Windows 8 desktops or at least start playing with them inside of their existing Zen Desktop infrastructure. So we're working really hard to make a VDA, so a virtual desktop agent, available for Windows 8 so that you can do exactly that. So our product management team, in their exact words, was, we know there's a pent-up demand. We're trying to do this, but I'm not making any promises. So... as you can see, I've got one. I can do it. So it's there. It exists. It's early code, so there are some stability challenges. So once they've sorted those out, I'm hoping they will make one available for you guys to play with. Because it's, I don't know how many people are going to want to, you know, deliver Metro. But if you're working out of the desktop, as you can see, it looks like the other desktop I was on as well. The same applications turn up there. I can still run ZenApp apps. I know that started really fast, but that is actually a ZenApp app. I can start ZenApp apps inside of it, the same thing. So most corporate users are going to play in this space anyway. Very few are going to deliver VDI from Windows 8 and work in Metro. I know I'm not allowed to call it Metro. I don't know what else to call it. WinRT, what is it, modern UI or something like that? I don't know. That's not my fight. The Metro thing's not my fight. Everyone else I know talks about Metro, so I'm just going to use terms that people can relate to. I don't see that much demand for delivering VDI and users working inside a Metro. This is the space they'll work. So clearly you can see I already have a receiver plugged in here. That is our current production receiver that works on Windows 7 and stuff. It still installs here. Nothing clever going on there. Does it do touch? Not on this device, but... well, that's not entirely true. That's not entirely true. If I oh God, so you're pushing me here. You're pushing the boundaries of my demo. Let me try this. There you go. So I rolled across that. Unfortunately, my swipe in from the right on the touchpad on this PowerBook comes up as a C, but it brings up the charms and stuff like that. So touch is getting fed through to here. So the answer to that is yes, there is touch, and there will be more. So as you can see, it just looks and feels and behaves just like Windows 8, because it is. And that... there's about all I'm allowed to show you about that. Let me switch to one last device. I know I've just gone over time, but switch. Got it. Okay. I know you can't see it. I'm a little bit, the space is a little awkward here. I have a Samsung Slate sitting here. The one other thing people have been asking for is a Citrix receiver for Metro or RT or the modern UI or whatever it is. Let me just... what, you can see the password? Yeah. Jeez. That's rough, isn't it? I know what I'm going to do. Ha. Suckers. You all thought you were clever, didn't you? Okay. Last thing, yes, that's me logged in. This is a Slate I've been using for a while and playing with. And there's Citrix Receiver. I will log in here. I don't care if you see this password because it's a demo user anyway. Okay, so this is basically logging on to the same infrastructure that I've been logging on to here. This is connected back to the EBC in Sydney. And this all works with the normal gestures and stuff like that. You'll see, swipe up or down from the bottom of the screen, I get add apps, and I can go shopping for applications, which all sit in here. So I can choose go to meeting, and that will add to my workspace, and it shows up there. So this is basically just... it's a receiver for Windows Metro. It just works with the touch and all that kind of stuff. And basically, unfortunately, that's pretty much all I'm allowed to show you about that too. But I'm over time anyway. But basically, all I want to show you is there are new platforms out, and that's why you're here, Windows 8 Server 2012. We know that, and we're onto it. We've got stuff coming for the Metro UI, i.e. Metro Receiver, that kind of stuff. We've got Windows 8 VDI and RDS 2012 support coming with zendesktop.next. And that's about that. Is that it? Questions? Thank you.